Hey there, and welcome back to Raising Your Strong Willed Child. I'm your host, Sonali Vongchusri, and today we have Dr. Sandy Gluckman joining us. Before we meet her, I'd love to just read a little bit about her. So Dr. Gluckman is a learning, behavior, and mood specialist. She's an author, an educator, and an international speaker who has consulted with and trained thousands of parents and teachers in different parts of the world. She presents a fundamental and highly effective shift in understanding how to treat and heal learning, behavior, and mood challenges, preferably without medication. And I love that bit. Dr. Gluckman does not manage the symptoms children have. Instead, she removes the symptoms by finding and healing the underlying root causes. Her proven whole child treatment process is based on her unique blend of studies in functional medicine, interpersonal neurobiology, and psychology. The integrated approach treats all aspects of the child's health, spirit, body, and brain. She believes that a parent cannot give their child what they don't themselves have. Therefore, she treats and educates the parents at the same time as healing the children. Welcome, Dr. Sandy.
Thank you, Sonali. I am so delighted to be here.
It is so good to have you here. And I'm so excited because I feel like what you've done with your work summarizes so much of my journey so beautifully. And I do, for everyone listening, there was this quote that I read on Sandy's Facebook feed. And I just want to share it with everyone because it really touched something inside of me and helped connect dots for me. excuse me. So what Dr. Sandy says is when we as parents are stressed, this changes our heart rate in such a way that the beat-to-beat rate does not flow gently and coherently. When we are with our children, their heart rate will sync with ours. The thing is that there is a connection between the heart and the brain. Wow. I love that.
And if we take it a step further, Sonali, if our heart rate is not coherent, our children's heart rates will sync with our heart rate. And because the heart speaks to the brain, our children's incoherent heart rate will affect the way in which their brain functions.
Oh, that put like a click for me. I knew our hearts were connected and I knew our brains were connected, but I never connected to our hearts, but I never put, it's like a U-shape in my mind. That's how I see it. Like, I never put that pathway all together like that. And I think that's just beautiful. Thank you for sharing that, Dr. Sandy. So if it's all right with you, I'd love to just jump right in.
Sure, let's get started. I'm excited.
All right, let's do it. So this summit is all about raising strong-willed kids. And the parents that are watching have kids that struggle with behavior and mood challenges. And I'm wondering if you could tell us, just right off the bat, when you hear the term strong-willed child, what does that mean to you?
Well, my answer might surprise you. The very first thing that it means to me is that this is a child that has a deeply hurting spirit. Strong-willed children actually look like they're, you know, confident or strong on the outside, but on the inside, they're hurting very, very deeply. So for me, a strong-willed child is one who is in a great deal of inner pain and has a high level of anxiety. But it's manifesting as strong-willed behavior, which indicates that they are in survival mode.
Okay, so what I hear you saying is a strong-willed child is really a highly anxious child who's in survival mode because they don't know how to deal with what's going on.
Yes, and I think that, you know, you mentioned in my bio about the fact that I don't like to teach parents or teachers how to manage strong-willed children. Mm-hmm. So I think that the thing that concerns me a great deal is that these wondrous children, they usually just have an amazing way of seeing the world. But what happens is that their behavior is seen as being dysfunctional. And so they get taken to doctors and they get a label, and this label is then hung around their neck. It becomes a stigmatizing label. It could be like defiant or oppositional or even just difficult, or there is even a psychiatric label for it, a DSM label, which is ODD, oppositional defiant disorder, which is really totally rubbish. So my concern is they get these labels, and then what happens is they're taken to a therapist. And by this time, they are beginning to think there's something wrong with me. I'm not okay. Maybe I'm broken. What is the matter with me? I'm not like other children. And then they start getting a lot of negative feedback from mom and dad because of their behavior, from teachers because of their behavior. And so once again, this is reinforcing that for them that I'm not okay, there's something wrong with me. And so I think that with all the best intentions in the world, parenting programs have until now focused on teaching parents and teachers how to manage these children. But neuroscience has made it very clear for us what is going on with these children. And so for the very first time, we are actually putting the two words neuroscience and parenting into one sentence, because we can no longer ignore the incredible discoveries that have occurred very recently in the past 10 years in neuroscience, which is completely transforming the way in which we parent children. And it's certainly not going to make any difference by trying to manage these children. We need to understand what is going on inside of them.
I'm loving what you're saying. And I just want to recap what I hear you saying. I hear you saying that we're trying to manage these kids up here with like traditional approaches. And what you're saying is you want to dive down and go under and figure out what's really going on with this child. And right. Then everything else is going to come naturally. And I also heard you saying, and this resonates so strongly with me, about how when you label that child, for me, what it feels like is like you put them in a box and you're saying, okay, you're in this box and we're trying to help you, but you're still in this box and there's something different and wrong and not right. So there's just something going on here that isn't quite right. So you're in this box. And even when you're describing that, I can feel the isolation. I can feel what it's like to be that child. I was that child in a lot of ways. And so growing up with my own disability. And so I know what it's like to feel like you're in a box and how lonely it can be there. And you're really saying that you don't need those labels, that there's a different way to do this.
Absolutely, we don't need those labels, because quite honestly, Sonali, those labels tell us nothing. It's just a label, and we know what is going on. We can see these children are struggling. We see their behavior, so I don't understand why we need to hang a label around their necks. But I think that in addition to that, if anybody has ever watched some of my videos, you will know that I am kind of infamous for my complete distaste of these diagnostic labels, because they become a part of the children's identity, and mm-hmm. eventually they become the very label that they're told that they are. So I don't like labels. I find them very destructive to the child emotionally, socially, intellectually, and spiritually.
I hear you completely. So I'm wondering, and for everyone listening, so if you're not working with these behavior, like managing the behavior, how do you work with parents that come to you with a child who has unique mood challenges and behavior challenges?
Right. So here's what I get parents to understand. And that is that the strong-willed child, and this really applies to so many other kind of issues, but let's focus on the strong-willed child. That strong-willed child, the underlying root cause of the outward behavior that you're seeing is that this child is pumping enormously high levels of stress chemistry that's flowing through their body and their brain, and actually through their spirit as well. So I'm literally talking about stress hormones that are at very high levels in the child's spirit and body and brain. So when you have very high levels of cortisol and adrenaline, what then happens is that when there is something called the HPA axis, which is the hypothalamus, the pituitary, the adrenal gland, when the child interprets something in its environment as being uncomfortable or unsafe, and we never know why these kiddos think of something as being uncomfortable for them, but they do. And if they feel that something's uncomfortable, this HPA axis starts to pump all the stress hormones. And at that moment in time, those children are capable only of three kinds of behavior: fight, flight, or freeze. Mm-hmm. And our wonderful, strong-willed children are those who are in stress-induced fight behavior. So the underlying root cause is this very high level of stress. So I work with parents for them first to understand that this is not a difficult child. It's not a problem child. It is a child who is driven from the inside, physiologically driven by high stress hormones, and has no choice other than to be in fight mode. And that's the survival behavior that I'm talking about.
Okay, what I hear you saying is that that's what they've chosen, these children that are under high stress, is they've chosen the fight mode. And what clicked in for me is when I look at my other two kids, I can see, you know, my middle son, when he probably has those same hormones, those stress hormones flowing through him, but he chooses flight or freeze. And right. So they don't get labeled as strong will, but actually there might be an underlying issue of stress going on with these other kids as well.
Yes, well, those who are in flight rather than fight, they withdraw. So they often get called withdrawn or depressed or undermotivated. But they're actually, those are just words describing the flight response to stress.
Oh,
and then
you get
those children who are in freeze. Those are the children who are afraid to try anything new, who don't want to take a risk, who are absolutely frozen with a fear of failure and just cannot move.
Oh my goodness, that explains so much. Thank you. You put it so succinctly and so clearly, and it's so easy to understand. I can now, I get it. And I hope everyone listening, I hope that that's resonating with you and that makes sense. Dr. Sandy, you and I'm just going to tell everyone listening, we've talked before about this whole topic. And I know that you have this beautiful word you call it inflammatory parenting. And I would really love it if you would tell everyone listening what inflammatory parenting is, what it is.
So I do talk about inflammatory parenting and non-inflammatory parenting. Mm-hmm. So I have to take a step backwards. I was saying a moment ago that the one of the root underlying causes of the strong-willed behavior is that we have a child who is very highly stressed. Mm-hmm. And when we have these children pumping high levels of cortisol, this results in high and chronic inflammation in the child's body and brain. So an inflamed brain is going to have its neurotransmitters upset, the balance of the neurotransmitters are upset, and it can cause the kind of behavior we're talking about. So inflammation in the body and in the brain and in the spirit of these children is one of the underlying root causes. So certainly one of the things that we do not want to do as a parent or a teacher is to inflame these children even further.
Okay.
So inflammatory parenting is the kind of parenting where, again, with all the love and the best intentions in the world, we are actually aggravating the child's stress and we are inflaming the child more rather than calming and deflaming the child. And so I teach them, I discover what kind of parenting they are practicing, and I show them how that kind of parenting will tend to have the very opposite effect of what they are trying to achieve. So let me give you an example. when a child is in fight, and fight, flight, or freeze, but let's just again focus on fight. When a child is in fight mode, it's a survival mode. It is driven by the physiology of stress chemistry. And at that moment in time, that child cannot really hear you because the brain is inflamed. Mm-hmm. And so you can try all the logic in the world. You can give them examples. You can threaten them with consequences. You can promise them and bribe them. You can shout and you can yell, whatever you're doing. It is simply aggravating the stress hormones. And the inflammation gets bigger and bigger and higher and higher. And then parents are going, why can't my child hear me? Why do they not listen to me? Why do I have to repeat myself 10 times? Why is this happening? But really, as I said, the parents are trying all kinds of things that are actually shooting themselves in the foot.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I hear you. So you're saying parents are trying different things that are not working with their kids that might actually be inflaming your child's brain because it's causing more stress hormones to pump through your child's body.
Perfect. You got it.
Thank you. I love learning with you.
So non-inflammatory parenting is obviously the goal. And that's what I teach parents, the tools of non-inflammatory parenting. But before we can talk about that, I have to take you a little deeper.
Okay.
A little deeper dive. So we've talked about the fact that that strong-willed children are highly stressed. Their high stress forces them into fight. Their brains and bodies are inflamed, and we cannot react to them in a way that will increase that. But the question becomes, why are these children so stressed? Because they are obviously children who are in environments which are very stressful for all kinds of reasons. But this applies to children in affluent homes and in very safe homes where they are loved and adored and given everything they want and feel and should feel really safe, and yet they don't. So what is going on inside of these children that's causing them to feel so stressed, so unsafe, to be hurting so badly at their spirit level? Their spirit is hurting and aching. Why? And the answer is that these children, because of the way in which we are dealing with the symptoms and not the underlying root causes, have developed a core belief inside of them that I am not enough.
Ugh.
I am not good enough. I am not smart enough. I am not pretty enough. I am not athletic enough, whatever it may be. Essentially, these children are walking around with the pain of having an inner belief of I am not enough.
Yeah.
And for those of us, and I'm sure I can certainly experience that. I've experienced it for years and years. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that applies to pretty much everyone who's listening to me. Yes. That pain of feeling like I'm just not enough. It's horrible. It's really terrible. And the unfortunate thing is that unintentionally, once again, we are telling these children they are not enough because we're responding to their behavior in a way that gets them to receive the message of, I'm a disappointment, I'm just not enough.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So essentially, the non-inflammatory parenting has to go all the way down. I talk about two kinds of underlying roots. There's the root cause that, you know, like a tree where the root is near the surface, near the soil. You've got some roots that are at the top by the soil, and then you've got the deep roots that are really underneath in the ground. So if we want to heal these children at the root, we need to heal that core belief that they're carrying inside them of I am not enough. And when we heal that core belief, the stress just goes away, the fight goes away, the inflammation goes away, and we see these wondrous children emerging like beautiful butterflies.
So, you know, I have to ask you, so then how do you heal that? Because that is a deep hurt. That is a deep value. That's a deep belief. Like you said, that we all know that pain, what it's like to feel that we're not good enough, that we're not, you know, competent enough, that we're a disappointment. So how do you begin working with parents to heal that?
Yeah, I thought you might ask that. So, but also before I talk about that, just for us to remember that these children are constantly getting the messages or interpreting the messages that they are not enough. And, you know, I don't know how anyone ever measured this, but they say we have 50 to 70,000 thoughts a day. Mm-hmm. And with these children, they are constantly looking for evidence all around them because they're very sensitive, they're very perceptive, they're very in tune. And so they're picking up energies and they're constantly looking for evidence around them of their not enoughness. And so they will find it. You know, there will be a teacher who will kind of send the message. There will be a parent, a friend, whatever it may be. And of course, they're not concentrating and focusing so well. So they find lots of evidence to support their not enough belief.
Yeah.
So where does this not enough belief live? And where does all the evidence that they collect go to strengthen that not enough belief? It lives in a neural pathway in their brain.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is that neural pathway, the I'm not enough neural pathway, gets strengthened every time they have one of these thoughts. And as I said, there could be hundreds of them during the day, 50, 100, 300 times that they feel like they're not enough, and it gets dumped into that neural pathway. The neural pathway gets deeper and deeper, and eventually it becomes a default that they will go into in any kind of situation. And our strong-willed children, when they default into their feeling of being not enough, they come out fighting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So to answer your question, how do we change that? So we have to, let me say that one of the most amazing discoveries is neuroplasticity. Thank the Lord for neuroplasticity. Because in the years gone by, we thought that if something was wired into the brain, it would be hardwired. And we're not going to be able to change it. We may be able to teach people to manage it, but we really can't change the wiring. And with neuroplasticity, we've now discovered we can rewire and unwire and wire our children's brains. We can do it with ourselves as well, even through to being 90 and 100 years old. So we can rewire the children's I'm not enough belief that sits in the neural pathway. And we do that by starting a new neural pathway. And of course, the new neural pathway is the title of my new book, which is I Am So Enough. My new book is going to be called the I'm So Enough Brain. So this is the I'm Not Enough neural pathway. It just sparks as often as possible. And I am so enough neural pathway that we start is in the beginning really very fragile. It's a little fragile pathway, and I'll talk more about how we do this, but it is up to the parents and the teachers to start strengthening the I'm so enough pathway. And I must tell you that there's something phenomenal that the brain does, that every 3 or 4 months it does a scan of itself, and it's looking for neural pathways that are weakened. Just like when we go into the garden and we look at a tree and we see one of the branches is looking like it's dying, we will prune that branch. Well, the brain does what it's called neural pruning. And so if it sees a pathway that's weakening, it will prune that pathway. So it's up to us as the parents to rewire and strengthen that new neural pathway of I'm so enough, over and over again until the other pathway is so weak that it will be pruned away. And that's why I said earlier that we can't anymore separate neuroscience from parenting. And the other thing, Sonali, that's so important is that I know that parents try their very hardest to give their children encouragement and words of support and motivation and tell them, but you are so smart, but you are so good, you are the best ever. The thing is that we cannot change a neural pathway from the outside in with words, because these children's brains are so inflamed that they are not hearing those words, and the brain is not grabbing and holding on to those words.
Yeah,
and in many cases, it's like you're saying all these right things to the children, but it's like going into a bucket with a hole at the bottom. It just seems to go away. Mm-hmm. They don't seem to be able to hold on to it. So what I do is I teach parents how to start the new neural pathway in such a way that they're actually healing the children from the inside out, not from the outside in, because the words are not going to make the difference.
Oh my goodness. I love what you said, and I think it helps to explain why some kids' cups just never seem to get full, because and we sense it, that they've got that hole in the bottom, so no matter what you say, it's just all leaking through, and because it's going on the surface, those compliments, words of praise are going on the surface, we've really got to go under.
We do, and sometimes, unfortunately, again, we're doing this with love, so we're saying all these good things to them. But have you noticed that sometimes they get really aggravated and angry with us when we tell them that they're great?
Not only that, I remember as a kid people saying that to me, and I would just be like, liar.
Yeah.
Right.
And you're my mother, you have to say that.
Right,
or get really angry and say, don't tell me that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really work to do it that way.
Right. It doesn't. The child isn't able to hear it in that way. So I know you have, I think where we'll go next is into this really cool tool that you have and that you're offering parents they can try today. And so this, for everyone listen, just listen up. This is amazing. This is incredible. And I'm so excited for you, Dr. Sandy, to share it with everyone.
Okay, can I go back one more step, Sonali, before
Absolutely.
I say this?
Absolutely, go for Thanks. It, yes.
Because otherwise we're missing a piece. So in my work, I am a great believer that our children come to teach us something. Mm-hmm. And we need to be able to be open enough and be able to learn from them and be able to listen and be able to hear. I also believe that our children become who we are. They are us. And so a great deal of my work is involved in doing family of origin work. Because what happens with all the most wonderful parents is that obviously what we did is we brought with us from the past a program. From our childhood, from the way we were parented. And we take this program, we fall in love, we get married, we become a parent, and now we're attempting to put that program onto our children. And that program is pretty much outdated. It's kind of gone past its due by date, and sometimes contains things that is absolutely not working for the kind of temperament that our children have. And so that's the reason I'm telling you all of this, is that there is no point in learning how to do a tool as a parent if you have not actually cleared some of your own outdated, unfinished emotional business. And so, because the tool will never work, you would be using the tool in a kind of mechanistic way, as opposed to from your higher self, where you are calm and at peace and serene and not stressed, and where your heartbeat is coherent. And then when you use these tools, oh my gosh, you can transform the child's life, or you can by giving them new neural pathways. Does that make sense?
Not only does it make sense, I'm so glad you brought it up, Dr. Sandy, because what I hear you saying is you've got to work on yourself so that you can come from a space that has like no charge, that that you're really coming from your true self, and then you can go and connect with your child. But first work on yourself with your family of origin. So your siblings, your parents, like all the stuff that you've got from there, work on your own self-healing, and then you can go to your child. And I'm so glad you brought that up and you pulled that piece together, because that is really a huge missing piece.
It is a piece, and I know that you've done a lot of work you shared with me. So
yeah.
The thing is, I don't want my listeners to think that, your listeners to think that, oh my goodness me, this is going to take forever, and it's just such big work, and I don't want to go there, it's too painful. It doesn't have to take long at all. I do it in 2 or 3 sessions, and we're cleared.
Oh,
so
my goodness.
It really needs to be done. And then you can practice non-inflammatory parenting that rewires the brain. But if you're going to be practicing it from a stress place, from a heavy lower self as opposed to the lighter higher self place, it's not going to be effective. So that's why I always say that parents cannot give their children what they do not themselves have.
Yeah.
And parents, we want our kiddos to be so happy and to be successful and to love life and to learn easily and to behave positively. And yet we're not living examples of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what kind of role models are they looking at?
Right. They're only going to copy what they see us doing and how they see us being. And, I'm so glad you brought that piece in, because I always say about my eldest that he is my teacher. He is my guide, because he's the one that really showed me all those spots in me that I wanted to then work on so that I could then meet him in a space that he wanted me to meet him in. So thank you. I'm so glad you brought up that. Yeah. Oh, thank you.
That's beautiful, because if we really realize that our children, especially the ones who have challenges, mm-hmm. they've arrived to show us, Mom, Dad, you've got to look at the world differently.
Yeah.
There are things you need to look at about yourself, things you need to look at about the world in a whole different way. And what we're saying is, no, don't do that. Don't be up there and tell me that. Come down here and fit in the box. And
right.
then everything's going to be fine. But when we do that, we disconnect them from their true spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And being disconnected from the true spirit of who you are is very painful.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm bringing it up before I share the tool, because it sounds like I'm putting off sharing the tool. I'm not. Step
no.
number one of sharing the tool is that you do some of your own clearing and just take yourself to a higher place. There's so many wonderful ways to do that. And I'm sure, Sonali, you've done them all. You've practiced them. But they're not difficult. And they're beautiful and fun to do. May not be what you normally do in your life, but so easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
So once that's done, and maybe we can talk about that another time, but once you feel as though you're ready to take on this wondrous task of rewiring your child's I'm not enough belief, that sense of I'm just not enough for this world. When you're ready to do the rewiring, here's what you do. Go and buy a project sheet, you know, one of those boards.
Big poster boards, yeah.
Big poster board.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of always like white, but you can choose whatever color you like. And then you get a photograph of your child. And if you've got more than one child, you're going to have to do it for all of them because they're going to be jealous.
Mm-hmm.
So you start with the one and you put the photograph in the middle of the poster board. You paste it on. And then you and Dad sit one evening quiet when all the children have gone to bed, and you brainstorm the characteristics and talents that describe your child. Not the ones you wish they had, but those characteristics and talents that you have seen them display. And what you do is you write those. Some of my parents have done the most creative boards you've ever seen. I wish I could share them with you, but obviously they are very private. But you write all these characteristics around the photograph. And again, be absolutely sure that you have seen them. Because if you put anything on there that doesn't belong to your child will know you're not being honest.
So you're saying you need to back it up. You need to have
you need to back it up.
Yeah. Okay.
So now you've got this. Children haven't seen it yet. I must say that a lot of the parents kind of tell me that they cry when they do this. Cry from pride, but also cry from the sadness of the fact that when did we last talk to the children about these characteristics?
Yeah.
We kind of see them. We see them sometimes right in front of our eyes, the child being so caring for the sister or being so smart with math or whatever it may be, loving animals, being a great cook, being a leader. But when did we last actually put it into words and tell the children? The sort of trap that we fall into, all of us as parents, is that we tend to spend more time talking about what's not working than what is working. Yeah. So we will be on and on and on and on about what could they need to be changing, but we forget to say, wow, I just so love this thing about you. Yeah. And so once the board is done, and by the way, you can get this in detail in our book, which is called Parents Take Charge, How to Heal Without Medication. So once the board is done, you find the sort of right appropriate moment, you approach the child and you say, well, I guess I'm talking as mom, Dad and I are so proud of you. We just so love you. And we did such a fun thing. Come and have a look what we did. And you present the board to them. The parents all tell me that the children's eyes are wide and there's a big smile on their faces and that's me. And then what you do is you go through each of those words one by one. So you are friendly, you are helpful, you are supportive, whatever it is that you have on the board. And you ask the child, do you think that describes you? Now, very often the strong-willed child can be oppositional, so they may go, no, that's not me.
Yep, that's what I expect. Yeah.
So, but then you, of course, the other children may agree. But if they're going, no, that's not me, you go, that's interesting because, you know, I saw you doing that yesterday with Susie. Mm-hmm. Do you remember how you helped Susie yesterday? That's why I say you're caring and you're kind. And then you go to the next one. So now they're beginning to see themselves in through you, in your eyes, for all the positives that they are. And they're also beginning to make the connection between their behavior and that characteristic that they begin to own. Mm-hmm. Now, once you've been through that exercise with them and you then put the board somewhere that is prominent, I often say put it either in a place where you can see it pretty often during the day or perhaps in their bedrooms so that before you go to bed at night, you can take a look at the board and say, which of these did you practice today? Which of these did you do? So they begin to see again the connection with who they are, how they behave, and their unique identity. It's called the unique identity board.
I love that. I love this idea. Yeah.
Every single time you see your child, from that moment on that you've done the board, you become mindful. And every single time you see your child doing one of those things that are on the board, displaying it in the real life situation, you have a conversation with them. Now, this is a very, very important part with regard to neuroplasticity. And that is that the conversation needs to last a minimum of 20 seconds. Because otherwise the brain is unable to hold on to it and absorb it. So let's say, for example, you've said that the child is funny. Mm-hmm. It's got a good sense of humor. So the child is doing something funny. You use that moment and you go, excuse me. You go, David, you are so funny. You make me laugh. It just feels so good when you make me laugh. And you know what? Now, this is the part that you're extending into the 20 seconds. Because if you just say, you're so funny and it's wonderful that you're so funny, the brain's not going to hold it.
Yeah.
So you extend it for 20 seconds by saying, and you know what? You know why it's so good to be have a good sense of humor and be funny? People like to be around you. They just love being with you. And you never know. One day you might actually do something with your sense of humor. Perhaps you're going to be a comedian. Who knows? But it's really a super wonderful characteristic to have. Now, can you see that's kind of 20 seconds, I guess. Mm-hmm. But you're taking the child not only into describing the characteristics, but taking the benefit of that characteristic into the future.
Yes, I saw that, and I love that. You were
where they could take it.
Yeah, you were telling them, you were taking them on this journey. You said, you're funny, and guess what? I'm going to take you on this ride and show you how amazing it is that you are this funny person, and look at how you have all this influence, and, you know, and you just radiate this awesome light when people are around you. And I think I saw the journey and I thought, oh, that's really cool how you're taking them on this journey, explaining who they are. And I loved how, like at the beginning, when back it up a little bit, when you were like, oh, you know, if they said, no, I don't see that, and you're like, interesting. You didn't say, oh, that's not true. You just allowed them to be, oh, yeah, you don't see it. Okay, that's interesting because this is what I saw. And you really, like, hammered it down with concrete examples that they couldn't argue. They, you know, even if they don't think they're that characteristic, like funny or caring, the situation that they gave, it starts to seep in. I could feel like it starts to seep in. Oh, maybe I am that thing. Just maybe I am.
And there will be many occasions that they will hear something like that. So
yeah,
they'll begin to take ownership. So the three steps are see it, mm-hmm. feel the pride of it. That's my boy. That's my girl. And then speak it. See it, feel it, and speak it.
Ah, so that's for the parents. See it, feel it first, and then speak it. I love that. I've never heard that before. That's amazing. That's beautiful because, yeah, when we feel it inside of us, it comes through. It flows through our words naturally, right?
It does. Like, and it comes across very authentically because these children, as I said, are super sensitive, super smart. They know when you are faking it. And
they
that's
do.
The worst thing that's the worst thing you can do with them is fake it.
Yeah, they do. They really know when you're faking it. My son knows when I'm trying to speak nicely, but I'm really not feeling nice.
Yeah,
as do my others too, but he's the one who'll show the fight. So thank you so much. I'm super excited to make this unique identity board with all my kids, and I'm excited to see what happens. And I encourage everyone listening to try this. I think it's going to be a really fun experience. So try it. Let us know. Hop into the Facebook group, email Dr. Sandy or email me and let us know your experience with it.
I would love to know that.
Yeah. Yeah. I would love to know how it's landing with you and with your family. And Dr. Sandy, you also have an amazing free gift that you're offering parents listening today that'll help support them in this tool.
Well, actually I have two. The one is a video describing the tool, even more deeply. And showing examples of what the board could look like. So it could be as creative as you can make it. And the other thing is that I am so excited to announce that I am doing a 30-day online program. So what this means is that for 30 days, every day there will be a video that will come into your inbox. And it actually takes you through the entire program of the getting understanding your own parenting program that you brought with you. Mm-hmm. So we're dealing with the family of origin work in these 30 days in one or two lessons. And then I'm taking you through all the steps as though you would be in my consulting room of how to heal the stress-induced kind of behaviors that children go through. So it's really, really powerful. I'm going to be putting up a landing page in the next few days for the program. I'm not quite sure yet when it's launching, but it looks to be like the next 10 days or so. Mm-hmm. And I will also be offering a discount to all your listeners, Sonali. So okay. If they go onto that landing page, I don't even have the URL for it right now, but would you be kind enough to let them have it?
Absolutely. So I think what we're saying here, and this is an amazing opportunity because it's Dr. Sandy in our home, walking us through this process, working on our family of origin work, and then bringing it forward to our family. And by the time this interview airs, it sounds like it will be ready. So we'll just add that URL down below this interview. Participants can click on it. And if for whatever reason that didn't work, we'll pass it out through an email or post it on the Facebook group. So it'll absolutely get out there. I so appreciate you offering a discount on that program. I so appreciate the way that you've also given the information for the Unique Identity Board. I think it's such an important tool, and I think it fits so beautifully with where we are in this series, because we've gotten on this journey, we've gotten to do some of the work around meditation, mindfulness, healing ourselves, working on ourselves, and now we get to take that forward a little bit with this piece of the identity board. So what a neat way to bring it together.
I'm so glad. You know, I did leave out a piece, and I won't be able to sleep if I don't say this. And that is that identity board, in case the listeners have not made the connection, that is the beginning of the new neural pathway. Mm-hmm. So the more often you will see it, feel it, and speak it, the deeper that child's new neural pathway will become, I am so enough. And there's just one final little neuroplasticity rule, and that is that as parents, we need to be sure that we talk 5 times more positive than negative. Sorry, 5-1, a ratio of 5-1, 5 positives to 1 negative. So that you go to bed at night and you say to yourself, did I give 5 positive messages to 1 negative today? And you'll be surprised to see that in the beginning, you realize how many more negatives you're giving than positive. And when you shift that around, the change in children can be actually almost immediate. So thank you for letting me put that in. It would have worried me if I had.
I love that. And I think it's important information too, because I think so often for us as parents, we go in and we see all those negatives, those things to improve. And I think the Unique Identity Board and what you're saying help us remember, whoa, there's a whole bunch of other stuff that is going on with our child that let's celebrate it. And let's let them know how much we're celebrating them and celebrating the family that we've created and celebrating them being a part of this family, because we are just super thrilled about it. So I'm so glad you brought that up, because I think it's such a simple way to remember and to check in with yourself. How am I doing? You know, how am I doing?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so there are a bunch of tools in section 3 of my book. It's Parents Take Charge. And my website is www.drsandygluckman.com.
Thank you so much, Dr. Sandy, for sharing with us today, for joining us today. Thank you for the work that you do. And the way that you've connected our healing work with our child and really bringing it this together so the whole family can rise up together.
Thank you, Sonali. I just want to say that I love what you're doing. I think that this summit is so, so critically important. And thank you for making this available to everyone and for inviting me.
I appreciate you saying that. Thank you to everyone listening. We're glad you joined us. I know this information is so super valuable, and I'm excited to see identity boards, pictures of them posting up in the Facebook group or email to us. Thank you for joining us. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.